Today we are continuing our series. We've been talking about Explore God. We've been really, there are about 200,000 plus people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, churches, small groups all over that are doing this. And each week we're looking at one of the really, really big questions. You might say the questions of life, or you may say they're the big Explore God questions. There really is a God. We want to know about Him. We want to know how to answer some of the questions that, if there is this God, mean for our lives. And you know, one of the things, if you know Jesus really is God, or if Christianity is really true and this kind of thing, one of the things that we often get into as Christians is this question: is Christianity too narrow? Is Christianity too narrow of a faith? The news that came out this week was the story out of Oregon, the story of apparently kind of a deranged guy that did some horrible things. But one of the things that was reported was that when he would hold a gun up to people, he would say the question, or ask the question, "Are you a Christian?" Now, I don't know if the news is going to show that that was something that really happened or not. It sounds like it was, and it's kind of interesting because we know a little bit about this guy. For example, we know that he had no religion. He said he had no religion. And we know that he despised organized religion, but he said he was spiritual and he was interested in paganism and something called Wiccanism. He was interested in those things. Now, the first time I ever heard anything about Wiccan or anything about a lot of these religions, I was living in Austin. 3 years ago, we moved here from Austin, and we were there for 5 years. Where our church was in South Austin is one of the most religiously diverse places in the United States of America. We're just a few blocks away from a major Muslim mosque. We weren't very far away from one of the largest Buddhist temples in the state of Texas. You could just throw a rock and you could hit any religion you wanted. It was all right there, and not very many churches. So this kind of question that we're looking at today, is Christianity narrow, was the kind of thing that a lot of people in Austin then and now are interested in the answer to. And all over town, you would see on the cars this bumper sticker that would say coexist. Can we put that up on the screen? Do you have that picture? How many of you have seen this? Maybe you've got it on your car. I don't know. Maybe you don't even know what it means. The C is the Islamic crescent, the symbol of Islam. The peace symbol, you know, love and peace. Those of you who are in the 60s, you know all about that, right? E is the egalitarian symbol of men and women are equal. The star there is the Jewish star, the Star of David. The I, normally inside of that O, you can't hardly see it there. There is a little pentagram, and that is the symbol of the Wiccan religion. So that's where that symbol is. The S is actually a part of that symbol of the yin and the yang, the symbol of Confucianism, which is a religion in Japan and other parts of the East. And of course, the cross is a symbol of Christianity. The idea of coexistence is a beautiful thought. We all going to get along. That's great. I like that. But I have some questions. When we say that we're going to coexist, does coexisting mean that we all have equal claims to truth? Can all be right? And would it be arrogant if I said, or you said, that your own beliefs you thought were true? Today we are living in what we call a post-Christian America. And the problem with Christianity in the world today is people say the only thing wrong with you Christians is you claim you are right. That's kind of a joke almost, isn't it? You know, if you think about it. But that's true. I mean, you go anywhere, that is the culture that we live in today. Now, I think for a lot of people, they imagine, and I've heard this so many times, that God is on the top of a mountain. And what we're all doing on earth, all 6-7 billion of us, is we're just kind of finding our own way to God. You've got Buddhism, I got Christianity, and you've got Islam, and you got this, and New Age, and all of that. And we're all just finding our own ways to God, right? Everything's just relative. We're just making our way to the top of the mountain. It's a great Greek word for that. It's called baloney. It's not a Greek word. Don't look it up. It's not a Greek word. Everyone knows that that's nonsensical, isn't it? I mean, to say that everything is true doesn't make any sense. So this morning, as we look at this statement and this question, is Christianity too narrow? We have to think about what Christianity actually does believe. And now the verse I want to give you today kind of starts this conversation. It happens at the end of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and it's a fairly narrow-sounding statement. Matthew 7:13, Jesus said, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small or narrow is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Now today, what I want to say to you is I don't believe that Christianity is exclusivistic. I don't believe that Christianity is narrow-minded. But I do believe that Jesus said there was a specific way to get to life. And that's what I want to unpack for us this morning. So if you got your notes, you want to follow along with me, I just want to share with you a few things. Number one, Christianity, I believe, is inclusive. Now, we've all heard that Christianity is an exclusive faith, you know, and everybody thinks that. But if you really think about it, let's think about it. The major religion in the world today is actually Christianity. There are about 2 billion people who are Christians. There are Christians who speak every language on this planet, just about. There are Christians in every culture, in every continent, in every country in this world. Christians are actually more represented by diversity than any other religion in the world. So if you're really to be honest, as a fact, it's a fact that Christianity is the most inclusive faith. And yet people run around going, well, no, Christians are so exclusive. In fact, what Jesus actually told his disciples to do was not to be exclusive. He said, I want you to go into all the world. And I want you to talk to everybody. We read about how the early Christians, they went to the pagans, they went to the Romans, they went to the Greeks, they went to every religion to tell them about how they could have life through Jesus. I love that vision. We're going to talk about it in November next month as we do our series called The Throne, the Lamb, and the Dragon. And we're going to look at the book of Revelation a little bit. And there's that scene where John's looking up into heaven and he sees Jesus, the Lamb, on the throne. And then he looks around and he sees all these people. And it says that every tongue and every tribe and every nation has been brought together by Jesus. You see, that Christianity is a very inclusive faith, but here's the but that you're waiting for. Jesus is the only way to life. That's the argument, the message of Christianity is that Jesus is the only way. Now, a critic's going to come along, the critic, and maybe you're one of them today, and you're just kind of sorting this thing through for yourself. You're trying to work your way through these questions. You just don't know the answer to them. The critic is going to come along and they're going to say, well, what about the old Indian parable that we learned when we were kids, all kinds of books, called the Blind Man Parable, the story of the king and the six men. And we can show you a picture of the kids' version of the book, you know. How many of you have read that or are familiar with that? Maybe someone, you're like, I don't really know. Let me tell you the story then. It is an old story. It's about 1,000 years old or older from India. The king orders that six blind men be brought, and each of them, blind that they are allowed to touch a different part of the element, of the elephant. And so the poet described it like this. The English poet John Godfrey Sachs said, it was six men of Indistan, to learning much inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, that each by observation might satisfy his mind. We learned that poem when we were kids. And then one by one, they pick out different things. A blind man feels a leg. And he says, as he feels on the leg, he says, it must be a stone pillar. And then he feels the tail, and it's, you know, kind of feels like a rope. And he says, I think it's a rope. Another one feels the trunk. And he says, I think it's a tree branch. Another feels the ear, the big ear of the elephant. He says, I think it's a fan, a hand fan, you know. If they feel the belly, and he says, I think it's a wall. Another one feels the elephant's tusk and says, I think it's a solid pipe. And all of them go around. And then finally, the king explains in this old parable, all of you are right. All of you are right. The reason every one of you is telling it differently is because each one of you touched the different part of the elephant. So actually, the elephant has all the features you mentioned. You're all right. And our culture loves this story. Because we go, yeah, that's right. All those religions and all those ideas, they're all just us blind people kind of feeling for God. And we're all just describing what we feel and what we experience, and we are all just right. The only problem is they're actually all wrong. All of them are wrong, aren't they? All of them are describing something that isn't the elephant. And the only person who actually can see in the story is the king. And I don't know about you. I don't want the vantage point of the person who doesn't know and who can't see it. I want to know what's really there. And so when we read the Bible, we hear the message of the King Jesus, who in John 14, 6 says, I am the Hadas. I am the Aletheia. I am the Zoe. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I want to know that. Because today I don't want just a religion. I want to know how to get life. I want to know how to get to God. I want to know how to get to the top of the mountain. Paul, when Peter was preaching in Acts 4, he said, salvation is found in no one else. There's no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. And people are going to say, whoa, that's too limiting. I mean, you can't just say there's just one way to have life, one way to be saved. Okay, let me use a different example. One of the worst diseases in the history of the world is the disease called polio. In 1988, on this earth, there were 350,000 cases of the disease polio. Polio can make you paralyzed. It can kill a child. In 2013, there were only 416 cases in the world. We virtually eradicated it. And it existed in only three countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Nigeria. This year, it no longer exists in Nigeria. There are only two countries in the world where just a tiny few people on this earth have this horrible, devastating disease. You say, well, what happened? How did that happen? It all started in the 1950s when the American people called out for a cure to be made to this horrible disease, the polio vaccine. In 1952, a polio epidemic in American history, which was the worst ever, there were 57,628 cases. Some of you have family members who were impacted by this. 3,145 kids died. 21,269 were left for the rest of their lives paralyzed. It's one of the most horrible, debilitating outbreaks in American history. And Americans said, enough. We need a cure. We need an answer. And they invented this thing called the polio vaccine. Well, as they were being administered all over the United States, they were being administered in schools. It was one of the places. And John Yates was a teenager. Today he's a preacher, and he describes what it was like. He says, when I was a teenager, the students in our high school were called together, and each was given a sugar cube. You can see it up here on the screen. And they'd put pink syrup on it. It was a serum that had been developed by Dr. Jonas Salk to keep us from getting polio in a time of the polio epidemic across our country. Now, did we turn up our noses and say, I don't really think I want to avoid polio this way. I'm going to wait until another means is made possible. Now, it's possible some people did that, and some people died. But listen, is it narrow-minded to tell people, we have a cure, and we want you to be saved? Is that a narrow-minded perspective? Because really, when you think about it, honestly, when you look at it just on the face of it, it doesn't sound narrow-minded at all. It sounds like you really care about someone else. Which is another thing about Christianity that's often said, is that Christians are intolerant. And I want to say to you, number two, that I believe that Christianity is a tolerant faith. It's a tolerant faith. It actually is very, very tolerant, and it always has been. In fact, we live in the United States of America, and most of us here live in the United States. Our founding fathers, when they were drafting the Constitution and putting together, they included this thing in it called the Bill of Rights. A lot of people know about the Bill of Rights, but did you know that in that process, this guy named Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter, and Benjamin Franklin, to these Baptists living in Danbury, Massachusetts. And the Danbury Baptists said, listen, we went through some bad stuff over there in Europe where they would tolerate our religion. We want you to protect our religion in the United States. And so they included what they described as a clause that would separate the state from the church, and thereby protect religious freedom in this country. Now, our country is founded on the idea of protecting the religious freedom of people who think differently. And if you think differently than me, that's great. I am totally into letting other people think what they want to think. But I'm also interested in knowing the truth. and pursuing the truth for myself. I'm interested in that search for what is true. It is a tolerant faith, actually. But here's one of the great messages of the Bible. Religions are not enough. Can all religions coexist? Let's go for that. But religions are not enough. Paul, in the great moment in Acts chapter 17, came to Athens. You know, he looked at all the different things he had seen there. And in Acts 17, 22, he said, he stood up at Mars Hill and he preached this message. He spoke to the people there. He said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are," what? Say it. "Very religious." Wait a minute. If that was true, if Paul came to Athens and says, "Hey, you guys are very religious," why didn't he just pack up his bags and walk out? Why didn't he say, "You know what? You guys got plenty of gods. You got plenty of religions. I'm out of here. You got the bases covered. You don't need to hear from me." Well, he goes on to say, "Why? I see you're religious. I walked around. I saw your idols, your objects of worship. I found an altar. I even found this one altar with an inscription to an unknown god. So you're ignorant of the very thing that you worship. This is what I'm going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and doesn't live in temples built by human hands." The unknown God altar was actually discovered, among other places, at the Palatine site or hill in Rome. I think we have a picture of it, don't we? Yeah, on that is an inscription to the unknown God. The people of the day, they were so interested in not offending a God that they actually acknowledged the fact that they didn't know if they were right or not. That there might be, in fact, a God they didn't know about. And when Paul showed up, he said, "Listen, guys, you are very religious. The only problem is you just don't know about the way and the truth. You just don't know about the only way to have life." And so then he would share with them this message. Now, I do not believe that Christianity is intolerant, exclusivistic, for all those reasons, but for one last reason. And that is, because it is a forgiving faith. At the very heart of the Christian message is the message that says it doesn't matter where you've been or what you've done, you can find forgiveness today. It doesn't matter what your religious background is, it doesn't matter what you've done in your life, that no matter who you are, no matter what faith tradition you come from, what culture you come from, what language you speak, that today you can find forgiveness. No other faith offers that message. The message of salvation, the message that says you can be totally and completely liberated for all time. And then also brings with it the but that everyone will be judged. There's a good news and a bad news. Just think about Jesus. Every time Jesus would confront somebody, he met a woman at Samaria at a well, and they're having this conversation. And Jesus says to her, "You know, why don't you go get your husband and bring him back over here?" And she says, "I don't have a husband." Jesus says, "Well, you're right. You've actually had five, and the man that you're with now is not your husband." I mean, here is a woman who has a kind of a checkered background. She hasn't really been quite living out her moral faith. But Jesus doesn't judge her or condemn her. Jesus doesn't come down on her. Jesus offers to this woman living water and life. He meets this woman caught in the act of adultery in John 7. He says, "Neither do I condemn you." Nobody throws a stone. He meets this well-known sinner called Zacchaeus in a tree, comes and eats dinner at his house, and says, "Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to your house. I've got the good news for you." But then he also says to every one of these people something like this: "Now go and sin no more." Did you know if you look at every religion in the world today, they all have a moral system? Now, people say, "I don't like Christianity because it says there's a sin." Every religion says there's a sin. But not every religion offers you forgiveness through Jesus Christ. Not every religion offers a way to be rescued and redeemed and to be forgiven. And so this is how Paul finishes that sermon in Acts 17, 30 through 31. "In the past, God has overlooked such ignorance. But now, he commands all people everywhere to repent, to turn back to God. And he has set a day in which he'll judge the world with justice by the man that he has appointed. And he has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead." And next week, we're going to look specifically at the idea that we as Christians believe Jesus was raised from the dead.